morning. Thomas Cameron. I am appearing on behalf of Alan Smith, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. I raised 3 issues in this case, and I'm going to concentrate my argument this morning on one, and that's the question of the clergy penitent privilege. Mr. Smith confessed to Mr. Morris. He said, oh, by the way, when you asked me in the car, the answer is yes. And Morris had asked him if he had killed his wife. He said, I did it to her. The statute requires that a member of the clergy not disclose a confession or sacred confidence. The person has to be a member of the clergy. It has to be confidential. And the individual, in the course of discipline enjoined by the church to which he or she belongs.
Okay, and he belonged to the Eastside Baptist Church at one point.
At one point, he belonged to Eastside.
He became a licensed member of the clergy there.
Correct.
And then he left that church.
Correct.
And then he became a member of City Church.
Correct.
And it seems to me the statute that you just quoted requires that the discipline enjoined by the church to which he belongs. The only church to which he was a licensed, he did not belong. So does that why doesn't that sort of end the discussion right there?
Well, he was licensed.
Yes.
Remember, clergy licensed. He was licensed at Eastlake.
To which he or she belonged.
Exactly.
So
he was
getting at.
He was licensed at Eastlake. The pastor said he was an assistant minister.
Right.
He was given a temporary license. That becomes permanent if he doesn't have any problems. Nothing was disclosed. There was no question about that. Nothing disclosed about that. So he's still a licensed minister. Remember,
leaving the church doesn't qualify as a problem.
I don't think so. I think he's a licensed minister.
So no matter, he can go to any church.
No one ever.
Once he's got that license, no matter what, he can become a member of the Catholic Church.
He could become a member of the Catholic Church, but as we know from Buss, he can't become a priest unless he goes through the requirements of becoming a priest. But otherwise,
so when a priest leaves, if a priest left the Catholic Church and went to some other church, he's
still a priest.
So he can still, within this new church, he can still take confessions, even though it's not a discipline enjoined by the church.
Well, what's interesting is, put that aside, what did Morris say? Morris told the police that he was a licensed minister. His application to be a volunteer at City Church said he was a licensed minister. Seems to me that he's disclosing to people that he's still a minister.
Well, did he disclose that to Mr. Smith? The findings seem to indicate he did not.
He did not. He did not. But the statute only requires that the person be a member of the clergy, and clergy is defined as, means a regularly licensed minister, regularly licensed or ordained minister, whether acting in an individual capacity or as an employee or agent of any public or private organization.
Well, he wasn't acting as a licensed minister for Eastlake when he talked to Mr. Smith.
He was not. He was not. So he was acting in his individual capacity. And I think he was very clear about that. He wanted to make sure that Smith's confession was true, that he truly was asking for repentance. So he was acting in his own individual capacity, but he's a licensed minister. So he qualifies as a member of the clergy under the statute. So then it becomes a question.
When he left Eastlake, I mean, his purpose was to give up the role of being a minister, was it not?
Yes, it was. But then he goes ahead.
But he can't do that, according to you.
Well, he could if he went to Eastlake and said, I don't want to be a minister anymore, because they're the ones that licensed him. But he's still licensed.
Eastlake didn't consider him a minister. Or you got me saying Eastlake now. Eastside didn't consider
Eastside,
him
I'm sorry,
a minister. And he didn't consider himself a minister. That's not sufficient.
I'm not sure Eastside didn't consider him a minister.
The findings say so.
But I don't think the facts support that.
Well, you didn't challenge that. The only finding that you challenged was number 12.
Then I would like to challenge that finding. Because I don't want to go form over function here. I want to make sure that Mr. Smith gets a fair hearing here, and I don't want to end up having to have a PRP here where I'm found to be ineffective for not arguing that that finding of fact is I should have assigned error to it. So I move the court to assign error to it now.
And just to clear, to be clear, on in finding of fact number 12, which you did challenge.
Correct.
It seems like the only part that you're challenging is the statement at the very end that Morris was never an ordained minister at
Correct.
Eastside Baptist.
Correct.
But that's the only part of that finding that you've challenged.
Correct.
Okay.
But Eastside, he left Eastside. He's still a minister. He's still a licensed minister. Eastside never revoked his privileges. All we know is the pastor said he became a minister. It was a temporary license. It became permanent if he didn't have any problems. There was no testimony that there were any problems, so he's still a minister.
Wasn't it required, though, that he act with the authority of the pastor of
City Eastside? Church
of Eastside? I mean, that's what the findings say, is that that in order for him to act, it has to be authorized by the pastor at Eastside.
Well, remember, the pastor at Eastside said he can only he's prohibited from doing certain things, weddings, funerals, baptisms, things like that. But they didn't say anything about spiritual guidance. They didn't say anything about confessions or anything.
Well, let's talk a little bit about confessions. It appears from the findings that neither Eastside nor City Church had a policy related to the confidentiality of any sort of confession. I mean, the handbook indicates that confidentiality doesn't apply to a confession.
Well, remember, for confidentiality, we're looking at it from the standpoint of the penitent, not the church. So the question is, what did Mr. Smith believe? And remember, Morris told him.
Well, I'm not sure that's accurate. I mean, it has to be something, a practice of the church, the discipline of the church.
Correct.
The discipline of the church does not have a provision for confidentiality of confessions. Then why does Mr. Smith have, why does his expectation matter?
Well, you have two things going on here. You have the confession, and you have whether it's confidential. So the question is, what is the church's policy on confession? Then you ask about confidentiality. Was it confidential? Yes, because Morris told him, this remains between you and I. So the question is, what's confession, which is separate and apart from whether or not it's confidential?
Okay. All right.
May it please the court, I'm Kathleen Weber, and I represent the state of Washington. The question raised before the court today is whether or not the court erred in finding that the clergy penitent privilege did not apply to a conversation between Wendell Morris, who had left his role as a licensed minister at Eastside Baptist Church purposefully to shed that mantle and joined a City Church.
His license was a permanent license, though, was it not?
His license was a permanent license, but it was a limited license. And the limitation on the license was...
And the limitation comes from where? Comes from the church or comes from the statute? Or where do you see that limitation arising?
The limitation, according to the testimony from Pastor Banks of Eastside Baptist Church, was from the church of Eastside Baptist Church and from Pastor Banks, that Mr. Morris could provide no services, including counseling services, absent Pastor Banks' personal supervision. Pastor Banks was the only pastor at Eastside Baptist Church, and Mr. Morris could only provide services, pastoral services, by direct supervision with Pastor Banks.
Okay. And that doesn't go to the permanency, though. So, I mean, you would agree the license was permanent. I mean, there was no process for repeat.
Right. I agree that the license is permanent. I think that the important part in looking at that particular fact, though, is when you're assessing whether or not he is an ordained minister or clergy member for the purposes of the privilege, under Motherwell, at 114 Washington 2nd at page 359, the court said he also has to be acting in his capacity as a clergy member at the time of disclosure for the privilege to apply. And I think that's really the key in this case, is that Mr. Morris was not acting in his capacity as a licensed minister for Eastside Baptist Church. How do we know that? Well, we know that because Pastor Banks said when he left the church, I didn't have any control over him anymore. He wasn't acting as a minister for Eastside Baptist Church anymore. And that's the testimony that Pastor Banks testified to. It's also the testimony that Mr. Morris testified to, that he left Eastside Baptist Church. When he approached Mr. Smith, it was not in the capacity as a minister. I think it's also important to note, as the court has done, that Mr. Smith did not know that Mr. Morris, at one point in his past history, had been a licensed minister. And I think that goes to the purpose of the privilege, which is to encourage people to fully disclose so that they can be fully assisted by whomever is there, that they're disclosing to, whether it's a priest or whether it's a clergy member or even an attorney or a doctor or whomever these privileges apply to. I think it's also important to note that the court has strictly construed these privileges, because privileges are limited to their purpose and they get in the way of the truth-finding function. And that's why the court has strictly construed those privileges. They must be an ordained pastor. They must be acting in the capacity when they receive that confession. It also must be a confession or an admission made in the context of a discipline enjoined by the church. And I think the court touched on this a little bit in its questioning when it talked about the discipline. Neither Eastside Baptist Church nor City Church actually had a discipline involved in confession. It's unlike the Catholic Church that's got a very specific discipline involving confession, where an individual meets privately with a priest and even, you know, in a small room, a confessional, to take that confession. Neither Eastside Baptist Church nor City Church had any kind of discipline that involved taking one-on-one confessions between members of their churches or the members of the clergy of those two churches. It's important also to
So in your view, in this case, even if, let's say that Mr. Morris had become an associate minister or something at
City Church,
mm-hmm. and Mr. Smith made a statement or confession to him, in your view, that would still not be confidential because they don't have a provision for confidentiality in there.
Well, they not only don't have a provision for confidentiality, but if you are actually counseling somebody as a pastoral member, pastoral members of the City Church community are required to tell counselees that this is not a confidential communication, and that if you provide me any information
Suppose the pastor fails to do that, or the minister fails to do that.
Well, then I think it might depend on the circumstances, but certainly given the strict construction that the court has placed on privileges, it's unlikely that that would pass muster, because it still isn't a discipline enjoined by the church. The last thing that the court needs to consider in this particular case is that the communication has to be confidential. And defense puts a lot of eggs in the basket that Mr. Morris said, well, what you say stays between the two of us. It completely ignores the fact that Mr. Smith, after discussing what had happened and after making his confession, said to Mr. Morris, I respect what you do with this. Mr. Smith never retracted that statement, despite several days of Mr. Morris encouraging him to take this information to the authorities so that he could be completely redeemed, so that he could start the path to redemption, that he could be fully reconciled with God. And the defendant said, no, I'm not going to go to the police. But he never said, and by the way, I want you to keep this confidential between the two of us. Because Mr. Morris was not a member of the public or a member of the pastoral council, and he was not a clergy member as defined by statute, and he was not acting in the capacity that he was working in that he had been licensed to work in through Eastside Baptist Church at the time that he talked to Mr. Smith and obtained his confession. He was essentially acting as an individual. The court found, and the evidence supports that finding, that he was acting in his individual and not clergy capacity. In that effect, even though Mr. Morris initially said, "What happens stays between you and me," it would be no different than if one of your honors gave me a confidence and I promised to keep that confidential and later changed my mind. I might be a bad person for changing my mind. I might be a good person for changing my mind. But it has nothing to do with the privilege that attaches in this particular case, or that's being argued that attaches in this particular case. In sum, I believe that the findings of fact have been supported by the evidence that was produced at trial. The defense has made a motion to amend its pleadings to challenge an additional finding of fact. If the court grants that motion, I would just be asked for the opportunity to respond to that, to address whether or not the evidence supported that finding, that newly challenged finding of fact. Otherwise, I'd ask the court to affirm the defendant's conviction for all the reasons I've argued here and in my briefing. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I wanted to touch on the last point that was made about confidentiality. And the question was about being told that it's confidential. Sure, the church had a policy that says it's not confidential, but Morris told Mr. Smith, "Stays between you and I." The question was asked of Pastor Banks at Eastside if he had told the penitent that it would be confidential. His testimony was he would be obligated to keep the conversation confidential. So even he agreed that if you tell somebody that it's confidential, you're sort of stuck with that, despite what the church policy might be. And I want to get into semantics a little bit here. In the testimony, there's a lot of talk about pastor and minister. Mr. Morris was not a pastor. Clearly, he wasn't a pastor. He was a minister. The statute talks about ministers. It has nothing to do with pastors. Pastors happen to be ministers, but the statute refers to ministers. Morris was a minister that applied to him. And Motherwell, remember, adopted the definition of clergy from 2644.020. Now, there was a discussion about Morris acting in his individual capacity. Once again, we look at that statute, and it talks about clergy, and it says whether acting in an individual capacity or as an employee. He's acting in an individual capacity here as a licensed minister. It applies to him. And we can't have the privilege so limited that it only applies in situations where there is a church policy on confidentiality and on confession, that the confession is confidential, because then it's limited to one religion, and that's the Catholics, because they're the only religion that has a policy that requires you to go to the church, confess to a priest, and that is confidential. If we limit it solely to that, then we might as well call it the Catholic privilege. So unless the court has any other questions, we would just ask the court to reverse and remand for a new trial.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.